Very pleased to have with me on the phone my friend, Cantor Simon Cohn, in Yerushalayim. It's in Jerusalem, isn't it?
I'm at the moment in Ra'anana. I think the last time we met was in Jerusalem.
In Ra'anana, okay.
I live in Ra'anana.
Aha. Okay.
How are you, Charlie?
Shalom. Shalom. Things are great.
Shalom to you.
During the 3 weeks and thereafter, I've just decided that I want to do some interviews for historical purposes. And you're on the list. So,
wow, that's very nice. Thank you.
So let's begin. Where were you born and raised?
I was born in London, in Hampstead, in northwest London. I was brought up there, Menorah, Hasmo, Manchester University. I grew up basically surrounded by music. Both my father and mother, very musical. I'd sang in choirs when I was a kid. My grandfather was quite a famous rabbi in Dayan in London, and he was also a chazan in the East End and in Stamford Hill. But to be honest, as a child, I sang in choirs, Lewandowski, Zulte, Mombach, but wasn't really aware of chazanos or chazonim. But I was very much exposed to classical and Jewish music. As a child, my father took me into his choir, which was in St. John's Wood. And I used to sing in St. John's Wood all the traditional English music, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a chazan there, I think, at the time, Abramovich. I think that was his name. I think he was a bass baritone. He wasn't a tenor. And it's a massive shul, about 1,600 people. And in those days, it was absolutely packed. And it was me and my brother Jeremy, I think you know, also lived
in New York.
Of
course.
And we were the tenors. My father was the conductor and the bass. And there were a few other choristers as well. I don't actually remember who they were. And that was my first exposure, I suppose, to Jewish liturgical music. And to be honest, after about the age of 16, it almost completely disappeared. I then got married, came to Israel, made Aliyah, and later on in my married life, we were having lunch with somebody who learned with Naftali, and he said to me, "You realize you just hit a top C," and I said, "And," and he said, "Not many people can do that," and I said, "Okay," so he said, "You should come and learn Chazonos with Naftali in Taki in Tel Aviv," and I said, "I don't want to be a chazan." So he said, "You have to. You have a talent. Hashem has given you a present. You have to use it." It took him about 6 months to persuade me to come. And then I turned up. How old was I then? About 30, 29, 30.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I came in and Raymond was at the piano, Raymond Goldstein.
Yes.
At the piano, and Naftali was standing on the stage. And the auditorium was full of all the students. At that time, the students, just so you understand, the students at that time were Azi Schwartz, Gideon Zellermeyer, Nathanael Hirschstig, Moscovich, just trying to think who else were there, Shimi Bergman, Ruben Pinsky, Nathanael Baram. He came a few years later, actually. And that was the first tenor line. So you can imagine the first tenor line was quite something.
Mm-hmm.
And they were singing Lewandowski's Matova, which, of course, I grew up with, so I was able to sit there and sing with them. And the next thing I know, Naftali comes out to me and says, "We're having a concert in 2 weeks in Migdal David. I want you to sing a solo."
Oh, wow.
And I was like, "I'm not singing a solo. I'm terrified." And he said, no, you'll be fine. And he put me on stage, and I sang Zacharti Lach from the Yom Yerushalayim davening by Lewandowski. And I have to say, I was absolutely terrified. My parents were very proud of me. But once I actually got going, I think it sounded okay, because they asked me to do more and more, and suddenly I just got inundated with bookings and people asking me to daven and concerts and Shabbatot and England, and from there just went b'chayr l'chayr, and it just grew. It was a bit of a shock, because there was a tremendous vacuum, because there was suddenly a tremendous need on my part to know Nusach in a much, much greater depth. and to understand Chazonos much more. And of course, I've been thrown in at the deep end. They didn't have the kind of pedigree and exposure that that all the other guys had had, you know. But Naftali and Raymond and Chaim Feifeld and the guys, they taught me well. And then after, Mordechai Sobel took me under his wing and taught me even more, embellished, you know. I've had the schut of being with Moshe Stern once or twice, which is also a tremendous experience. Anybody who is in Jerusalem should go and visit him. It's just amazing to be exposed to that legend.
Yes.
And, you know, thank God, ever since then, it's just taken off. I've been in all over the world, sung just about everywhere.
Are you searching for a regular position?
I was actually offered in London recently a position, but in Israel the permanent positions are a few and far between. And to be honest, I prefer to live my life in Israel and go visiting new communities around the world. The job that I was offered in London, I actually turned down because I don't want to live outside of Israel. I want to live in Israel. I love Israel. It's the place to be. Sorry, I know most of the people listening to this in New York and the States all live outside of Israel, but I'm sure everybody would agree that Eretz Yisrael is the best place to live. Medinat Yisrael. And if I go and live in London, so then I'm not going to be able to do that. My kids are here. My family's here. This is where I want to be.
What's your feelings about the future for Chazonos?
Well, I have to say the last 14 years that I've been involved, 13, 14 years that I've been involved, I've heard so many times people saying Chazonos is dead, it's dying, and then it's revived, and then it's dying, and then it's revived. And I am finding that apart from the big concerts going on in Israel, most of the cantorial concerts are an excuse to sing anything but Chazonos. So if I'm invited to do a concert in England or in Spain or in even in Istanbul, they want one piece of Chazonos, lots of one piece of Yiddish, Israeli, a piece of Hasidic music, and Broadway. And then you can finish off with another piece of Chazonos at the end. The desire to hear heavy Chazonos is not really around anymore, apart from in Israel, when Dr. Sobol or Eliyahu put on these cantoral concerts. And even then, I still have a feeling that people want lighter and lighter and lighter.
Does seem to be the trend, doesn't it?
I don't know what's brought it on. It's possible that there was a long time where shuls stopped paying chazonim. And then other people would go to the bima and they would try and daven. And wannabe chazonim who weren't really capable and didn't really have the skill set to be able to be chazonim just annoyed everybody because they just nagged and they screamed and they repeated and they went on and on and on. Until it was boring, until if you ask somebody, do you like Chazonos? They say, oh, no, I don't like Chazonos. But one of the most common comments that I get after I've davened somewhere for a Shabbos is, I hate Chazonos, but I loved what you did. And
by the way,
Yosela and Glantz and so many different pieces of Chazonos, but a little bit, not so much malt, they just can't take it anymore.
I often respond when someone says, I hate Chazonos. I say, I don't think you ever really heard Chazonos. And it's also complicated by the fact that in reality, there are some Chazonim, not many around today, but in the past, perhaps, who were not inspirational, if you will. I mean, I think when the Chazon sings, he has to inspire. It doesn't have to. There has to be some soul in there, and knowledge, of course. Of
Nosach, I agree. I completely agree. And I think the problem, it's a vicious circle, because when the Chazon himself is not inspired because his community is disconnected, so then him not being inspired once then leads them not to being inspired. And even if when he started off, half of the community wanted to hear him, because of the Gabbal, because of even the rabbi, he's being put down and being pushed to the back, and he's not inspired, and then he's not able to inspire. But I have to say that there are plenty of Chazonim today who are inspiring communities. I mean,
yes.
Look at Nathanael Hershtig, look at Gideon Selemai, Yanki Lema, each with their own
Zevi Moller.
Zevi Moller as well. What a fabulous voice and a wonderful Chazon HaShemoel. And what is actually common to all of them is that they all have brains. What do I mean when I say they have brains? They listen to their audience. They listen to their market. They don't overdo it. They do what their kahal wants. After all, we are shelichei tzibur. We are messengers of our community. And if we stand there just to go on and on and sing on and on, then we're not doing our job. But they listen, and they give exactly what they need. And therefore, they do manage to inspire. And this is why they're still chazonim in shuls in America, inspiring. Right. And there's a demand for it. Unfortunately, in Israel, how many shuls have permanent chazonim? We have the great Chaim Adler in the Great Synagogue with Ellie's amazing arrangements and Raymond's amazing arrangements. But how many other chazonim do we have in Israel that are able to do that and inspire?
Yeah, yeah. Well, the wheel goes around, though. I'm not ready to throw in the towel myself. No,
neither am I. I mean, I think my next year ahead, I think I have more bookings than I've, Baruch Hashem, Kanayin Ahara, than I've ever had before. All over the world, England, Australia, France. I'm going to Spain immediately after the 9 days davening there in the Great Synagogue, Istanbul. Where else I'm going? South Africa, please God.
I'll have to work on the United States. I have to work.
No, the United States, please God, in the beginning of May. The 10th of May in Miami, and then a week later, please God, in New York.
Great.
And then maybe in April something in Canada. So, Baruch Hashem, there's lots going on, but my feeling is when I come to those kind of concerts, they don't actually want heavy chazonis. They want to be entertained, but then they're really not interested in hearing a piece of Kvartin or a piece of Malavsky or a piece of Yosef. They give us one or two, and that's enough.
Well, one never knows when the soul is being touched, and all it takes, perhaps, is one or two. And let's pray that at least that happens and leads to bigger and better things, for sure.
I think the direction that, as a chazan, the world is taking is that the services need to be more inclusive. Whereas maybe 50, 60 years ago, the chazan and the choir would lead the service, I think today people in the community want to join in and they want to sing. They also want to hear a piece with a chazan and the choir, but they want to be able to join in. They want to be able to sing. They want to feel involved. Karlibach was a tremendous, the Karlibach music to me is, let's put it this way, it's not my favorite kind of music, but it's been incredibly successful at getting everybody included in the davening. You don't need to know anything about music to stand there and just chant the simple tunes that he has. And it moves people because they close their eyes, they feel connected, and they connect to Hashem.
Yes.
So the trick is to be able to put the real music of Chazonis into the davening, which really translates the words, because that's the beauty of Chazonis, but also to have inclusive music to allow the community to join in so that they feel part. They don't just feel like they're sitting at a concert or they're disconnected. That's the way that I find in London, in my community in Mill Hill, that's the way I find that people are most connected.
Well, so you're not pessimistic?
Not at all. Not at all. Music is always going to speak to people. The job that we have is to adjust our music to the times, to adjust our attitude, to listen to the community. You know, it's the lack of patience that people have is not necessarily only in shul. It's everywhere. Everything has become immediate in life.
Sure.
Immediate WhatsApp, immediate emails, and everything is immediate. So it's the last time somebody sat down and heard a concerto for 45 minutes. Very few people do that these days. Mm-hmm. You know, all the classical world is seeing that. Yes. People have less and less patience for long, long, long operas. They don't have the patience for that. Right. It's not only Jews and shuls. The sure. world has changed. And we as Chazonim have a job. We need to change it as well. We need to say it's connected, obviously, to what we've been taught, but we need to listen to the community. That's how I think the way ahead is.
Okay. Well, Simon, I thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us, and I'm excited to hear about your upcoming tours, and just keep up the great work.
Look, Charlie, the job that you've been doing, we met how many years ago in New York? When was it?
When
I had the technology company, 10 years ago, 11 years ago?
Yes, quite a few.
I was right at the beginning of my career. I was dreaming of one day standing on a stage with a Philharmonic Orchestra, Baruch Hashem. That now happens quite a lot. Uh-huh. But I remember we met, and your shlichut and your passion for this music, you and
Benny. Yeah.
Really, really, we all need to salute you because you've kept us all going. And if I ever I need a piece of music, I know that I'm going to be able to find it somewhere in one of your archives.
Okay.
Always. Thank you to you, and thank you.
Always available. Well, thank you so much for your kind words. Okay. Thanks again.
God bless. Be well.
Shalom. Okay, that was Simon Cohn, and we will next hear Cantor Yossi Malavani. Shalom, Yossi.
Hi, Charlie. It's nice talking with you.
My pleasure. We have a lot of thoughts and facts that we want to share with my audience. First of all, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background, where you were born, where you were raised, and so forth.
Well, I was born in Tel Aviv in Israel and raised in Tel Aviv. In terms, since the audience is interested mostly about the Chazones, the cantorial, at the age of 7 and a half, I started singing in a choir. I went to the school called Bilu School in Rothschild Boulevard in Tel Aviv, and attached to it still is until today this beautiful shul. And there it was called Beit HaKnesset LaTzairim, the shul for the young people, where Chazon Shlomo Ravitz, who was already retired, having been cantor in Europe, all over Eastern Europe and South Africa, and in the early 30s was the cantor of the, towards the late 30s, at Great Synagogue in Tel Aviv, in Allenby Street. When he retired from singing, he was asked by the principal, Chaim Mishori, principal of the Bilu School, to undertake teaching the children to daven and to have a choir. And so he formed a choir of, usually it used to be about 40 boys, singing just in two voices, soprano and alto. And at the same time, when he used to teach the compositions for the choir to sing, he trained the better ones to daven. Uh-huh. And so when I was about 8 and a half, close to 9, the age of 9, I already daven Kabbalah Shabbos, Friday night
wow.
services, accompanied by the choir, uh-huh. with Shlomo Ravitz, our Rebbe, Chazon Shlomo Ravitz, conducting the choir. And so it started. And equally at the same time, I was studying the piano, classically, in the Conservatory of Music in Tel Aviv. Those of the people who may know Tel Aviv, it was in Lilienblum Street. Eventually, I was in the Academy of Music, and it became part of the Tel Aviv University, and from which I eventually, much later, graduated. But the basis of Chazones, and because I was so musical and studying music theory also, that very quickly, it was actually just before I became 12 years old, I became Ravitz's assistant, and I became the conductor of the choir.
Well, there were...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry, there were many Fine Chazanim who came out of that choir. I think Motzin and others were also with Ravitz.
Yes, there were quite a few good Chazanim who came out, because Ravitz taught us. He also had a seminary for cantos, which used to be, I remember, Sunday evening and Wednesday evening at the Bilu, at the same place. He was giving a few rooms. Subsequently, or eventually, when just before I entered the army, he appointed me to be a teacher already of solfeggio, in other words, to learn how to read music. So, Ravitz was a genius, and that's the basis of my cantorial life.
Well, you certainly are a rarity in your musical ability. The piano, I don't know many Chazanim that could sit at the piano as you. I've seen you. If you remember when you gave a talk down at the Museum of Jewish Heritage a few years back, you sat at the piano and you mesmerized mesmerized me, that was for sure. I mean, with your ability.
And you know, not only the piano, because I'm a classical pianist, I still practice every day the piano for about an hour or something.
Really?
Or,
oh my
gosh.
Absolutely.
Oh. Sure. And also conducting both choral and symphonic music. And I can tell you that when I have a concert, a full night of my own, with a symphony orchestra, with their own conductor, whoever he is usually it's a man, I always insist that I have to conduct one symphonic piece. So one day when you come to my house, I'll show you a video of me conducting, I think it's the overture to the opera La Forza del Destino.
That's Verdi. Wonderful. Oh, yes.
I do that, dramatic. I do some Beethoven symphonies, always something just for my own satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So now after Ravitz and the army, you were in the army?
Yes. What happened was the time came and I had to go to the army. So I got into the army. The first 2 months are always military training, how to use guns, how to shoot, how to be in shape. But towards the end of the those 2 months, there was a visit of Rav Goren, Chief Rabbi Goren, who was then the Chief Rabbi of the Israeli Army, and he was then a colonel. Because he was recruiting new guys to become chaplains in the rabbinate, in the military rabbinate. And when he saw me, he said, "What are you doing here?" Matal said, I said, "Rav Goren," he knew me very well, because I used to go sometimes on Shabbos to his shul in Tel Aviv, and he used to ask me to daven Shachris or Musaf.
Right.
And of course, I was a great chosid of his. And so he said, "What are you doing here?" I said, "I'm in the army." He said, "What? You are coming to my base, and you are becoming a cantor? And I want you to organize choirs, and I want you to teach the chaplains to daven and to prepare them how to conduct storim in the militaries and to teach them things." So when the last day, when the soldiers are being sent to various camps, I was told immediately, "Go to the chief rabbinate base. They are waiting for you there." And I remember I went there, and Rav Goren welcomed me so beautifully and so warmly. And I became the cantor of the army, and I prepared choirs, as I said, and Pesach preparing for Storim with music and teaching Chazonim. Then we used to have Chazonim in the army who were part of reserve.
Uh-huh.
In other words, sometimes the cantor of the army couldn't do everything. So we had many, many Chazonim who the best Chazonim in Israel, who were reserves. That's how they served. For example, on Yom HaZikaron, they were sent to different cemeteries to do the memorial. If there were too many weddings, military weddings, and the cantor couldn't do everything because it's just impossible to cope, so they used to call the reserve Chazonim.
I see.
Moshe Stern was the reserve. Eliyahu Greenblatt was the reserve. The best Aryeh Brown, who eventually became the chief cantor of the army, was reserve. I brought him into the rabbinate to be reserve.
Wow.
Yeah, sure. All of them were up with us, and I had twice a year them for a day, because I composed melodies, and that's something very interesting for your audience. I composed melodies based both on Sephardi motifs and Ashkenazi motifs in the quest to try to form a unified music in the shul.
Uh-huh.
Rav Gorin himself had a Sidur, which he prepared, and also a Haggadah. In fact, if you look at the Haggadah from those years, the 1960s, you will see at the end a lot of music notes, which I arranged with my name there, of course.
Uh-huh.
And so that was my job in the Army.
So what years were you in the Army?
Between November 1960 and May 1963, a long time ago.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And when whilst I was at, here is another nice story, if I may.
Please.
So, with your permission.
This is the purpose of this interview.
Yeah, thank you. So, what happened, whilst I was in the Army, but maybe 4 or 5 months before I finished, there was a knock at our door, at our home, and a man came, he spoke to my father, and he spoke to him in Yiddish because my father did not speak English, and he said to him that I'm from South Africa, and I from Johannesburg, from the Yovel Shul, and we are looking for a chazan. And we heard him sing on the radio, the military radio, whilst we are here visiting, and I found out where you guys live. Nobody had telephones in those years in Tel Aviv.
Right.
And so very, very few had it anyhow. So he came, he said, no, you don't mean me. You mean my son. I don't sing. I am only in my son's choir, a whole family choir, when singing bass. And then, of course, a few minutes after that, I came in, and we made an arrangement. And as soon as I finished in May, I remember on the 31st of July, 1963, I flew to Johannesburg, arriving there on the 1st of August, 1963, and to become the chazan and conducting the choir, training the choir at the Yovel Shul. The Yovel Synagogue was located at the Jewish center of the Jewish life in Johannesburg. You had the Beis Din there, you had the Federation of Synagogues, you had the Mikveh, you had the German Jewish community, Adas Yishun, and everything. You had Bnei Akiva movement there. Everything was in our shul. And so I was there 4.5 years.
Really? They had a great tradition of great chazanim in South Africa, in Johannesburg.
Always, always, uh-huh. always. They had Berle Chagi, who was in Beis HaMedrash HaGodol. Israel Alter was a chazan in the great synagogue in Walmart Street. It's not a synagogue anymore. They copied it into a smaller size, and they have the same name somewhere in one of the suburbs in Johannesburg. And, of course, they're always a terrific Shlomo Mandel. What a chazan.
Mandel and Simcha Kusevitsky, I think, was still
Simcha
there.
Simcha Kusevitsky was at the beginning in Johannesburg, mm-hmm. but by the time I came, he already was in Cape Town.
Oh. Okay.
But I met him quite a few times. Mm-hmm. I was just running after the chazonim to Nash from them, just to get as much nusach and as much chazonis that I could.
Uh-huh.
But I paid them back, not in money. But I remember I wrote for them a lot of piano arrangements for their concert repertoire. I arranged a lot of choral pieces for the choirs, and so many shuls, the choirs used to sing similar compositions. So it was wonderful, because on Saturday night, at that time there was no television in South Africa, so people used to go to the movies, but not everybody went. So we used to get together the chazonim and the choir masters, because every shul had a chazon and a choir. And we used to get together, and I remember they used to compare, what did you sing? Which Kedusha did you sing? Which Uvnuchu Yomar did you sing? Whose composition? Because there are so many of them. It was a very, very rich cantorially city. And a rich cantorial life altogether.
That must have been a lovely experience.
Pali, yeah. It was really wonderful. And the Chazonim were all gentlemen, and they were nice, and they were experts. So they all came from Europe. They came with a lot of knowledge, and so it was wonderful. It was 4.5 years that I was there. Were wonderful. Of course, I got married there. I met my wife, and I got married there, and our older son Zevi was born there. So the family grew there also. That means personally. Uh-huh. But the davenings, every Shabbos, of course I davened every Shabbos. All the Chazonim davened every Shabbos.
Gotcha.
And nobody was allowed from the congregation to daven at the Omer.
Wow.
Only the Chazon.
Interesting.
Every shul had a Chazon Sheni.
Mm-hmm.
Who used to be the Chazon Sheni and the Baal Kriya used to read the Torah. And sometimes it was also the Shames, depending on the shul. And only the Klei Kodesh davened. So that the davening should be 100% correct. No games played.
Oh. So then from Johannesburg, where did you go?
So from Johannesburg, you know, I had problems with apartheid. People don't understand today, they talk about Israel being, God forbid, an apartheid country.
Mm-hmm.
Those who talk about it don't even begin to understand it, but I don't want to go into politics.
No.
The shul in Edgware in London, which is the largest, according to the Guinness Book of Records, it's the largest shul in the British Isles. Their cousin died, was an old cousin, and I don't even remember his name, but he was not very well known. Yes, his name was Fagan. My wife is reminding me. Fagan, F-A-G-A-N, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he died, and they were looking for Chazon, and they really decided to upgrade the services to a high. They wanted a first-class Chazon. At that time, London did not have great Chazonim. They had good Chazonim, but not very great. And so they invited me for a probe, for two Shabbosos, to come to daven at Edgware.
Mm-hmm.
But I was a little hesitant because I didn't want my shul in Johannesburg to know that I was going to try out another shul. They loved me there in Yeovil, and I had a long contract already. So the Mizrahi movement, it was Yom Ha'atzmaut, a very big event, just before the Six-Day War. In 1967, that they invited me to sing at their big banquet. They used to have huge banquet. At that time, they also welcomed Rabbi Jacobowitz to become Chief Rabbi of England.
Uh-huh.
As it happens, much, much later, I came to Fifth Avenue Synagogue, and Rabbi Jacobowitz was the first rabbi of the Fifth Avenue Synagogue. But I worked with him only in London, of course. So I came, I sang there at the dinner, and I made, thank God, a big hit. And I davened in Edgware one Shabbos, and I davened the second Shabbos. And the end of the second Shabbos, on Saturday night, we signed the contract. But because it was May, it was just before Shavuos, I felt that it would be wrong if I were to leave Yeovil before Rosh Hashanah,
mm-hmm.
although we still had more than 3 months.
Right.
But you know, in those years, in England and in South Africa, in the anglicized countries, the etiquette, the ethics of proper behavior between the shul and the chazan, and the chazan and the shul, and for that matter, the rabbis too, was the etiquette was very important and very strong. So I came back and I told them that we are planning to leave, but I will not leave the shul before Rosh Hashanah. And I told the people in Edgware, in London, that if they insist that I come for Rosh Hashanah, then I'm sorry, but I cannot take the shul. I cannot take it because I will not leave the shul so close to Yom Tov.
Uh-huh.
So they said, don't worry about it. We like what you're saying. It's important to us. And we only came February, the following February.
I see.
To Edgware.
Right. And what was life like in England?
Wonderful. It was a wonderful life. because very quickly, thank God, I was recognized as to my talents and the voice and everything else. And very dignified, very big shul, of course, choir all the time. Only Shabbos morning, not Friday night. Because in Johannesburg, we had the choir both Friday night and Shabbat morning, because most of the people come to shul in Johannesburg on Friday night, less on Shabbat morning.
I see.
In England, it's the same as here. Less people Friday night, but a lot of people Shabbat morning. So on Shabbat morning, we sang the greatest compositions, many of which I did not have a chance to prepare even in Johannesburg. But in London, I remember, you know, the shuls there are similar to the Spanish and Portuguese. I mean, architecturally.
Uh-huh.
And so you have the bima at the back of the shul, facing, of course, the Aron Kodesh, and all the people sit in front. There is a big aisle in the middle, and the people face each other.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's like the Spanish and Portuguese here in
exactly like Spanish and the, Portuguese. All the shuls in England, all the shuls in England are like that. So it was wonderful. The choir was up in the loft, and we used to prepare, and the conductor used to come during the Haftorah to me downstairs. So what are we going to sing? We discussed it for a few minutes, and he prepared the music. The choir was ready, and we just sang. Mm-hmm. And the davening was there also 9 o'clock. Officially, we were supposed to finish at 12, like here. But always the gabbai, the two gaboim, who sat in that box in front of the, used to call it the box in front of the bima, used to turn around and used to say, "Ah, Yossi, what? It's a long day. Sing a little more. Take your watch off, put it in your pocket, and just sing. Oh, it's another 15, 20 minutes."
Really? I love it.
For example, I'll give you an example. You know, when we say Aleinu Leshabeach at the end, right after that, usually in small letters, you have Al Tira Mipachat Pitom. Don't
sure.
be afraid from it.
Sure, the Hasidim, the Lubavitch include it,
true.
Always. Yes.
And a very famous composer, Samuel Alman, who was in England well before my time,
uh-huh.
was not alive anymore when I came, composed a fantastic piece to Al Tira.
Uh-huh.
And it was, everybody wanted to hear it. So not every Shabbos, but maybe once a month or twice a month, we used to sing it. And all Kedusha, and we had, for example, Uvnu Chayomar, putting the Torah back into the Aron Kodesh.
Mm-hmm.
We had 7 compositions that we used to sing. Every Shabbos, another composition.
And the choir was always ready, huh?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Used to rehearse every Wednesday night. And if there was a new composition, the setup was as follows. He met with the children on Wednesday, late afternoon, and the conductor. I came also, of course, to help him, but the main work he did. And at 8 o'clock at night, if it was a new composition, he met with a man. And we had a choir of boys, about 20, 25 boys, and about 10 men. And so and then on Wednesday we used to have a rehearsal of the boys and the men together, and we sang it, and then it was in the repertoire, so there was no problem singing it again and again. So London was wonderful.
Interesting.
And it was in London that I became a fellow of the Trinity College of Music, which mm-hmm. is part of Oxford, and in singing and piano playing, and it was wonderful. And you know, London is saturated with first class symphonic orchestras. We used to go a lot to the concerts,
uh-huh.
the opera.
But it was
a wonderful life.
There doesn't seem to be much happening with Chazanis currently in England. I mean, there's a few cantors that I'm aware, but I don't know what the current situation is in London.
But in London?
Yeah.
In London, it's not so good these days. It's not so good. I don't know whether it's because of money or finance. Many schools have part-time chazonim,
mm-hmm.
only for Shabbos. Right. And some of them find those young guys who sing, but they try to daven nicely. Some of them have nice voices, but they are not very strong with nusach.
Uh-huh.
And so I've done a few, I visit London often. So often, not always, but often when I'm there, they get together through this society of candles. And I spend an evening with them and we go through some nusach, not choral compositions, but nusach.
Regular davening.
And so I try to help them. I don't mind.
Right. How long were you in London?
In London, we were 5.5 years.
Uh-huh. Then
we were there from February 1968, early September 1973.
Okay.
No, 1968, sorry. From Shabbos Shira, Elie Deben's Sabbath of Song.
Uh-huh.
From Shabbos Shira 1968, which was February, until September 1973. And September 73 we came to New York to Fifth Avenue.
Oh, so you came directly from England to...
They invited us. There is a story how it came about.
Uh-huh.
But they invited us and they brought us over. They made me give up a life contract. Well, they gave me here once, so it's okay. But they made me give up a life contract there to come to Fifth Avenue, and I was anxious to spread the horizon.
Uh-huh. But did you have a problem giving up your, that the shul allowed you to break the contract?
They allowed. They understood that.
Uh-huh.
And for a little while after that, I used to come from time to time to London, so I davened the Shabbos until they got another chazan.
I see.
But they understood it very, very much. And I explained to them that I really want to grow and to as I said, to spread the horizons. And thank God, it's okay.
So let's see, from 73, that's 27, 37... 40,
it's going to be 42 years.
42 years.
It's going to be, this coming.
Now,
42 years.
You mentioned Jacobowitz and then did Roth. I mean, you've seen a lot of rabbis at Fifth Avenue.
Paul, I've worked at the Fifth Avenue Synagogue with four rabbis, each one excellent. The first one was Rabbi Rachman, Rabbi Emanuel Rachman,
uh-huh.
who, when he left us, he became president of Bar Ilan University, and then became chancellor later. And after him came Rabbi Nissan Shulman, and he came to us from Los Angeles, Rabbi Dr. Nissan Shulman, and he was with us about 7 years or so, 7-8 years. Very nice and very good pastorally. And as it happens, his wife is also South African, like my wife.
I see.
And my wife knows the family very well. And she was already gone to the United States, but I knew her father, I knew her mother, I knew the whole family. And after Rabbi Shulman came Rabbi Saul Roth, Rabbi Dr. Saul Roth, who was with us about 18 or 19 years, something like this, the longest serving rabbi
uh-huh.
at Fifth Avenue Synagogue. As you know, I'm sure you
sure,
heard him.
Of course.
A tremendous speaker and a great Talmud Chochem.
Yes.
And a philosopher and also a professor at Yeshiva University, which he still is. And after him came Rabbi Kermayer,
mm-hmm.
who, Rabbi Yaakov Kermayer, a terrific young man, did a lot in the shul, and he just left on Aliyah to Israel.
Yeah, we were at the celebration together just Monday
course.
Night, yes.
Yes.
So you're the anchor. I mean, you're the
solid
anchor.
Call it whatever you want. What do I know? Call it whatever you want. But I tell you, it's a wonderful shul.
Uh-huh.
What we have, completely different to other shuls, is because of the proximity of the area where the shul is, we have all the biggest hotels. And so we get guests all the time from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
Constantly. Who come, they stay in hotels and they want to get to the shul, which is closer. Our secretary, I don't want to boast, but our secretary in the shul, our administrator, tells me that usually as of Wednesdays, telephone calls come from people with different accents. asking, is the cantor davening this Shabbos?
Right.
Cantor Malavani.
Right.
She tells me that quite often it happened.
Uh-huh.
So it's nice. And,
yes.
And we have a lovely shul. We have wonderful balabatim. Quite a few young people. And middle age and older age. So it's, as we say, bin areinu uvizkeinenu nelech. We operate with young and old.
Now, tell us a little bit about the Bell School and your relationship and where you see that going. That's a lot to say. That's a lot to talk about.
Oh, yes, of course. Look, the Bell. I've been distinguished professor at the Bell School of Jewish Music since 1985. So that's also already 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I didn't even think of that.
Right.
And a lot of young people, a lot of young men went through our school and went through us, through me also.
Mm-hmm.
I always say that I divided the level of the students into three distinguished groups. One group is the young men with good voices, musical, anxious to become chazonim. And so this is one group. But I always say that before you try to be a chazon and a good one, you have to be a bal tefillah. You have to know nusach and you have to know how to daven well. If you have the voice and you have the capacity to improvise and to sing compositions, by all means, we work with you. And that's what I've been doing all the time. The second group is those who don't have great voices. So they will not make an impact as chazonim, but they will be first-class bal tefillah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very important to be a very good bal tefillah, to sing the right nusach. You can sing nigunim, melodies, and to try to find a combination. That's nice. And the third one, we have those two who don't have much voice, and they are not terribly musical, but they are anxious to learn to daven in case they are asked to daven. And I call them that they are the future balabatim and presidents and vice presidents of shuls. They will be the mevini. They will be those who understand and will be able to say this one is good,
uh-huh.
is less good, will be good, or whatever.
Interesting.
Now, the school has been doing very well, very, very well. And a lot of students all the time. What's happening now is that because of financial constraints that Yeshiva University has, they had to reorganize the school on different basis. Of course, I continue to teach. Usually I teach on Mondays. I think this year I'm going to teach on Wednesdays. And we are moving from the building where we are to the original building of Yeshiva University, the main one. And I think downstairs there are some beautiful rooms where we used to be before we moved to the new building.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what Yeshiva University is planning to do with the building, but I wouldn't be surprised if they will try to sell it or to rent it for good rental so that large income will
mm-hmm.
come in. So this is but the teaching, and also what is interesting, we are going to go on the internet. We are going to offer courses on the internet of Nusach. And so we will recruit students who are not in New York and cannot come into New York, and they will sort of sit at home and be in the class together with the students who are in the classroom. So we expect a lot of people to register because we always get a lot of requests for tapes, for CDs and everything. So we'll see how it goes.
Well, that's the new world that we live in today.
it's a new world that we are living, but we will stick to the Nusach and to the Chazon as it is,
uh-huh.
because we will not permit it to disappear. Of course we recommend Nigunim. Of course we want the congregation to sing. And in my shul, I combined melodies and chazones. And often, as you know, we have Yom Yun, and I lecture, and I explain to the people what I do.
Mm-hmm.
So, and what it's so beautiful. And after I explain, they become my best friend. So, because as we say, it's got to, everything has got to be done with good kite, as we say in Yiddish, in a good way. Not to force yourself, not to push, but in an intelligent, logical way, and show the sincerity how much you love the tefillah, the concept of tefillah. To be involved with the congregation, as we say in Hineni, one of the three attributes is Me'orav Bedat Im Abrios, to be involved with the congregation. So Baruch Hashem, that's why I suppose I'm 42 years in the shul.
Wow. That's terrific. And
I remember, I haven't really had much chance to tell you, but that I have accepted the rectorship of the institute in Leipzig in Germany. Did I tell you
about it?
May I talk about it?
Of course. This is your show.
I don't know. I don't know in terms of time how much time you have and how much time you can do.
As long as the recording will work, and we have plenty of time. No problem.
So here is what happens. For quite a few years, I had in Moscow, you know, I go often to Eastern Europe.
Yes.
I had in Moscow what we call the JDC, the joint JDC Academy of Jewish Music. And basically it was to get hold of young men it started when it was still Soviet Union, to come to Moscow for a week or 10 days, and I sat every day for 8 to 10 hours teaching them to daven. And we have quite a few young men who are davening in various communities in Russia. Now, Germany today, but I stopped it already. It was beginning to be a little too much, and I got involved in other things, so I couldn't do it. But occasionally, when I'm in Moscow, I was there last November. I spent a few days, so I had two concerts. But in between, I spent 2 days teaching. They all came to Moscow to study with. Now, in Germany, there are today well over 100,000 Russian Jews. And what's interesting, that communities all over Germany, many of them very historic communities, ceased to exist because there are not too many German Jews left.
Right.
Either they died or unfortunately intermarried, or many of them went on Aliyah to Israel.
Mm-hmm.
So the German government, when they began to have an influx of Russian Jews into Germany, said to them, we will let you come in and we will support you and we'll put you on your feet on one condition, that for the first 5 years you will settle in a community which we will tell you where to settle. Otherwise you will not get anything from the German government.
Why was that, would you say?
Why? Because they were anxious that what they call the Zentralrat, that's the Central Committee of German Jewry, which is, of course, situated in Berlin, wanted to welcome them because they wanted communities to exist. Those Russian Jews were not keen on going to Israel for whatever reason it is. At one time, the Israeli government asked the Central Committee of German Jews and the German government not to support them, so that they should come on Aliyah to Israel. But the German government turned it down. Because they were anxious to get good people, educated people, because Russians are educated, and to get them to Germany. And so what happened was that many communities, as I said, came back into life. And so the problem began, and they have rabbis. They have this famous yeshiva under the Lauder Foundation, and they have an institute for Orthodox rabbis. Most of the students are Russian Jews who are Balei Tshuva, and became rabbis, and are studying to be rabbis.
Where is that located?
The yeshiva itself is located in Berlin, in East Berlin. Well, today it's a one city, of course.
Yes.
And there, and I was there. I once spent the Shabbos there with my wife, and I davened it for them. It was a wonderful Shabbos, and they sang as much as they could. The problem is that most of these rabbis don't know how to daven. And the Russian Jews in those various communities has begun to complain that they would like to have, if to come to shul, they want to have some music in the shul. So they began to realize that it is a necessity. And so they came to me here in New York, the heads of the yeshiva, in conjunction with what they call the Central Rat, the Central Committee of German Jews. They came to see me in New York, and they said to me, you know, we want you to, we will establish a, we will establish an institute, and the rabbi of Leipzig, his name is Zsolt Bala, he's a Hungarian, and also a graduate of the rabbinic seminary, the Hildesheimer Rabbinic Seminary in Berlin, is a nice Baltfiller. So we combined it. He's our administrator, he organizes everything, and I am in charge, of course, of the program and mm-hmm. the teaching. And so we have identified 19 young people from all over Germany who come twice. My contract calls for twice a year, a week in November and a week in May, to spend about a week, well, actually it's only 5 days, to spend there teaching them the davening. I accepted it. Was a very interesting contract that we signed between the German government, the Lauder Foundation, the Rabbinic Institute, the Central Committee of German Jews, and myself. It was five.
They all got involved.
Yes, absolutely. And they're very keen. When I was there now in May, I was interviewed in the main German newspaper. With pictures, it's unbelievable. Of course, I speak German, so it's beneficial to those Russian guys. And
by the way, I'm sorry, just for an aside, where did you learn German?
I learned German on two schools. One is a little bit from Yiddish, of course, and number two, when I was a late teenager, before I got into the army, I was the assistant conductor of the Tel Aviv Philharmonic Choir. This was the choir that used to sing all the choral pieces with the Israel Philharmonic Orchestra, with conductors who used to come from all over the world. Most of them used to come from, of course, from, with the exception of Leonard Bernstein and another one, used to come from Europe. So they all spoke German.
I see.
And the chief conductor of the choir, his name was Eitan Lustig, was a Czech German Jew who lived in Tel Aviv, and he ran, and most of the singers, there were about 140 singers, most of them were still German Jews from those years. So they yes, it was amazing. So they preferred that the entire business was conducted in German.
Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't want to digress, but I was just curious. So you said that you spoke German, and you were able to communicate with them, obviously.
So I'm able to communicate very well with those guys, because most of them, I've been already in Germany for quite a few years.
Mm-hmm.
And so they speak German. Okay, not the best, but they say, my German is better than theirs, and mine is not perfect, but it's okay. And it's nice. Uh-huh. So I already taught them full Friday night, Kabbalah Shabbos and Maariv. We did Shachris, we did Musaf for Shabbos, and we've just finished, when I was there in May, Sholosh Regolim, in other words, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, the evening, Shacharit, and Musaf. And what we are doing now is, when I will be there in November, I will start, we'll have examinations, because they're very strict. We'll have examinations, and they'll all do well. and we will, and they, yeah, and we will then move into the High Holidays music. That's going to take a couple of years.
Yes.
To do it, and at the same time, they are beginning to identify a new group, and we'll see how many will they'll be able to recruit. Then I'll start with them again the Friday night.
Now, there are shuls throughout Germany that can receive some of these people?
Absolutely. They are already davening. In all those communities where they came from, they are all davening.
Good.
All the Rosh Hashanah is not ready yet. Uh-huh. Yom Tov is not 100%, but they are davening. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Gotcha.
And so there is an element of revolution there.
Interesting.
And what I also do, and I think some of your audience will appreciate, is, of course, I teach the real Nusar, the Eastern European Nusar, but very often I give them also the Germanic Nusar, especially the Lewandowski and Zulzer and Naumburg melodies, because I'm anxious for them to know it and from time to time to sing it in the synagogue. And I can tell you, you know, I give now a lot of concerts in Germany. They pick me up. And each time I'm in Germany, it's two or three concerts all over the community. And I get a chance to talk to the people and tell them and things which they don't know. So they are all friends of religious music.
Interesting.
All the Germans, they are friends of religious. I've been to towns that I never heard. I tell you an interesting story. Last November, I gave a concert in Mainz, in Germany. The president of the community is a former Israeli lady who's been married, and she married a German Jew there, and she lives there for many, many years. I think she's a psychologist or a psychiatrist or something. And I had a concert there. The accompanist is an Israeli religious guy who lives in Berlin. He does a lot of music there, classical music. And only through me he became acquainted with Chazonis. But with me, you know, the music is already, I write my piano arrangements and everything, so there is no problem. So when I came there, it suddenly dawned on me that I'm in a very, very historic, Jewishly historic town. Because, you know, the prayer of On Sane Tokef that we say on
Rabbi
Amnon from Magenta.
Sure.
Magenta. That was the town where he did it.
Wow.
And it suddenly occurred to me in the middle of the concert. So as I was singing something, it suddenly occurred to me, what? I am hearing something. It was in a beautiful concert hall near the shul. And when I finished the song, I told them that what On Sane Tokef is, or was, is, was, and that it was composed in this town, and they are the most fortunate people to live in a town where such a great tzaddik lived. And they had no idea. Nobody told them about it.
Interesting.
So I said to them, I am going to sing it for you. But the pianist did not know, doesn't know the music, and he cannot follow improvisation. Well, I was not going to improvise, but music which he doesn't know in Chazones, he's not quite able to do that. So I told him, please get up. I sat at the piano. I couldn't even find a machzor. But, you know, I've been singing On Sane Tokef quite a few years.
Yeah, I would say.
Of course, I have it in my mind. And after I explained to them, I sat down at the piano and I sang the same On Sane Tokef. Well, I sing a few, but the main one, it's the one that I sing from Siget. So my grandfather used to sing, and the Satmar Rebbe, the Bjoilish Zatzal, used to sing also, because he was a friend of my grandfather. So they must have shared the Nigunim somewhere in Siget. That was before he became Satmar Rebbe. And so I sat down and I sang the On Sane Tokef. There wasn't a dry eye. These Russians are very sentimental people.
Yes.
And the fact that they came to hear this concert meant that they are interested. They want to be uplifted both spiritually and musically and maybe intellectually also. So it was a nice experience.
Wow. So interesting. These stories are just so great. Yeah. And I'm really grateful that you're taking the time to share these with
that's
us.
That's okay. Anytime.
Now, the future. What's the future?
Well, the future is to continue what I'm doing. And my shul tells me, my officers tell me, listen, you are here until 120, and then we give you a new contract.
Amen.
And so, and I say to myself, for as long as the Ribono Shel Olam, for as long as God gives me good health, and thank God I'm fine, good health, and that the voice is well preserved because of my technique. Mm-hmm. I have an excellent vocal technique. And maybe I will get a chance, I can tell a few words about this aspect of my work. For as long as the health is okay, and thank God it is, and I'm not that old.
My listeners may not be familiar with the fact that you went through a crisis about, 5 years ago?
Yeah, about 12 years ago.
Is it 12 years? It went by so quickly.
Yeah, it did. It was a crisis, it was a health crisis, and thank God I got out of it. Fully recovered.
Yeah, it was...
Fully recovered. It was a lot of treatment.
Yes.
And for about 8 to 9 months, I did not daven, including one Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, that I was just not able to. I didn't have the energy. But thank God recovered, and I'm back to myself, very energetic, and let's not forget, 12 years older. So, thank God, yeah. So for as long as this is okay, I plan to continue teaching because we have to make sure two things. Number one, that the next generation of Chazonim or Balei Tefillah are taught the proper way, and also the shuls, the Balabatim. So maybe through the internet we will be able to spread the message. And I look forward, I don't know how to do it, but Yeshiva University will provide us with experts on the internet business, and I'll do it.
Yes.
I'll just do it.
Well,
I look forward to it, because really, it's a mission in my life. It's got to be done.
Yes. Yes. I wish you and the Yeshiva much success on that.
Thank you, Charlie. Yes. Thank you. It's important, and you know, we have the Cantorial Council of America, which is affiliated with Bell, which is Yeshiva University with Chazonim, and it's a small group, and maybe through the internet we'll be able to expand the organization to enlarge it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing that we will work on. So the future is a future that we look forward to. Hopefully it will be with success.
Well, we know that we must try, no matter what.
We must, Charlie, we must. Everybody, you, what you are doing through your programs, that you go to different schools and the radio program or the internet or the computer program that you do, has done, what you've done is tremendous over the years to make people aware of the whole thing.
Well, thank you.
So I wish you much success.
Thank you.
To continue with your work. It's very important.
Well, we both have our jobs to do, and I'm sure that we'll continue.
And we cooperate.
Yes.
And we cooperate.
That's for sure. That's for sure. It's always a pleasure to be with you on Shabbos, and see your wife upstairs kvelling over her husband. It's very nice.
It's okay. We'll to be continued, unless you have more questions.
Well,
but if not,
okay, I think...
Whatever you say, I'm at your disposal.
Okay, we will pick it up another time, because we've talked about this many times, and you know, if we don't do it, it's time for action. I think you may know what I'm going to suggest, but... I would like to have you give either a lecture or lectures on my show about Nusach.
It would be my pleasure. Anytime you want me to do it, just let me know.
And we've talked about it so many times, and I threatened to come to your apartment and sit there, and we can do tape 2 or 3 sessions or however we work it out.
By all means, and then I can sit at the piano and think and demonstrate what I have in mind, by all means.
Okay, that's my resolution. One of my resolutions that I want to make sure I take care of, because I know time has a way of slipping by, and you know when you don't do it, time disappears.
Yeah, it gets fast left. Yeah, that's right. Forgive my word. But yes, by all means.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, Yossi,
it's a mission, and it's got to be done.
Okay, that's something that I place it on both of us to make sure that it happens.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Yossi Bolavani, thank you so much for sharing these thoughts and your history and
thank
so forth
for
with us. It's my pleasure.
Thank you for inviting me to share my thoughts, my history with your audience. I cherish it.
Well, it's much appreciated, and will to be continued.
Yeah, to be continued. All the best to you, and all the best to all your listeners.
Thank you so much, Yossi.
Okay.
Okay, shalom.
Okay.